You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Multidimensional Health with Dr. Tony provides a truly holistic overview of health and vital well-being that will assist you in living your best life. Each week, she brings you fascinating topics about the Law of Attraction, Eastern medicine, as well as energy medicine that will help you to release physical and emotional blocks. It's time to create a truly magical life full of abundance, health, love, and happiness. Dr. Tony has the answers you have been waiting for.
I absolutely love supporting people on their journey to health and well-being. Thank you for joining me today. I have a wonderful guest with me today. His name is Hugo, and he's a holistic health practitioner and instructor. And he's here to share with us his wonderful and incredible story of how he healed completely from fibromyalgia using natural health techniques. In 1987, at the age of 21, Hugo became totally physically disabled with fibromyalgia. Over the following 2.5 years, he was told by many specialists that his pain and dysfunction will only get worse and was advised to focus his energy, time, and therapy on preparing himself for a lifetime of ever-increasing pain and disability. After discovering the healing power of the human body and finding his own healing, he became inspired to tell others his story. He has spent the last 30 years learning and teaching so that others can also become inspired on the path to health. He hopes that all of those who encounter disease will also connect with the positive change that comes from learning about and implementing principles of holistic health and the miraculous functioning healing potential of the body and emotions, and the peace that comes from taking control of one's well-being.
Welcome, Hugo. I'm so excited for you to be here. Thank you for being with us. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm fine, thank you. I'm very excited to be here, probably a lot more than you.
I am super excited because I know you have a great story to tell us about how you had fibromyalgia and you overcome it with natural methods. And I think that's so hopeful for a lot of people because nowadays there's a lot of people that at least know somebody that has fibromyalgia. At least I know my dad has it. And I know it's a very painful situation. So I think that it's going to be an inspiring show. So if you can tell us a little bit about your experience with fibromyalgia.
First of all, I'd like to say, you said that I have fibromyalgia. I don't have it anymore. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I really want to emphasize. When I was teaching at the school where you and I met, I taught a class on fibromyalgia. And like everybody else, we're always told that fibromyalgia has no cure. A lot of times people would call me or take my classes just because they couldn't believe that I actually had it and I'm over it. I've been symptom free for over 20 years now.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I know. So what was my experience like? Well, it was hell. It was very, very difficult, extremely painful. One of the ways that I always like to describe how painful it was is if I compare it to working out. If you've ever worked out and done exercise, and you get that burning sensation the next day that you can barely move. And if you remember doing that, as the days went by, the burning sensation, the pain lessened. With my condition, with the fibromyalgia, every day it got worse. And instead of getting better, it continued to get worse. My joints ached. My whole body felt like I was made of glass. And I had glass needles inserted throughout my whole body. That were burning hot. And every time I moved, especially my neck, every time I moved, it felt like one of these needles broke into hundreds of pieces. And instead of feeling like one needle, burning hot glass needle inside my neck, for example, now I felt like I had 100 of them. So it was very, very painful. It was also very frustrating. It was very scary because everybody that I talked to, I went to the doctors and they're the ones that were supposed to help me. And they said, well, first of all, what you have doesn't exist. And second of all, there's no cure for it. So when this happened, when I was diagnosed with it, I was 28 years old. And they told me that by the time I was in my early to mid 30s, I would be in a wheelchair if I was still alive.
Oh, wow.
And so it was very scary. A young man, I had no idea what was going on. Just fear from every angle, not only from what I felt in my body, but from what people were telling me. The treatments that I was receiving basically consisted of going to a doctor, And I went to several doctors, specialist after specialist, for 2.5 years. And they would give me several medications to take home, and they would say, try one. If it works, keep taking it. If it doesn't, don't take it. If you take one that works, take it for as long as it works, and when it stops working, take another one.
Oh my God.
I would go back to the, yeah, it was horrible. And then I would go back to see the doctor for the next visit, and they would ask me which medications helped, which ones didn't, and they would give me a different batch based on the results from there, and I would have to do that again. It was very, very frustrating. I by that time, I hadn't been taking medications for many years. And I remember one medication they gave me, they told me to take 4 pills 3 times a day. And I didn't want to do it. And one day I was so desperate, I decided to try it. And I took half of a pill. And it was a muscle relaxant. And I spent, I don't know how many hours on my bed, face up with my head turned to the side, drooling and unable to move because of the how strong the muscle relaxant was for me.
Oh my God.
And I didn't know what was happening because I had never taken muscle relaxants before. I felt like I was dying. But the worst part of it is that every sensation that I had from fibromyalgia, all the pain, everything was still there. So it relaxed my muscles, but it didn't do anything for the pain.
Oh my God.
That horrible. Was very scary. Another part that was very scary about my treatment is that because I had been told I would be in a wheelchair if I was still alive, once a week I would go to see a psychotherapist and I would sit in a wheelchair for the hour, and his job was to get me to be comfortable to spend the rest of my life on a wheelchair.
Oh my God.
And you can imagine for a 28-year-old person going through that. So that's in a quick nutshell, that's what my fibromyalgia experience was like. Very scary. No one that I could find that would help me, and just lack of understanding everywhere from all different angles.
Oh my God, it sounds like it was pretty scary and horrible, and you were so young, you know, at that age to just go through that and feel like you the rest of your life. I mean, that's a lot. But I know you overcame it, and I think this is so inspiring. Tell us a little bit how you started healing, how it happened.
You know, it's an interesting story. I love to tell this story. I was living in Orange County, which is in Southern California. And like I said before, I was 28 years old when I was diagnosed. And when I was much younger, 19, 20 years old, I went to college in San Diego, and I fell in love with San Diego, which is about an hour and a half south of where I was living at the time of my diagnosis. And I always wanted to move back to San Diego. At the time of my diagnosis, I was in a relationship that was absolutely horrible. I felt locked in it because I was living with my partner, and I had no means to get out on my own and leave the relationship. I was working at a job that I absolutely hated, and it was the most stressful thing I have ever done in my life. My fibromyalgia diagnosis was actually diagnosed by the medical doctor of the company that I worked in, and she said that it was work-related fibromyalgia due to stress. So I always wanted to move back to San Diego. I wanted to give up the job. And because my condition was diagnosed at work, it was under a workman's comp. So I ended up getting a small settlement. And with that settlement, I moved to San Diego, which I always wanted to do. I always wanted to find out what it was like to live in a monastery. And there was a monastery in Orange County that I used to go to on a regular basis. And they had a monastery in San Diego. So I moved into the monastery in San Diego. And I also, from very, very early in my teenage years, I wanted to learn shiatsu. And there was a school in San Diego, that you know, School of Healing Arts at that time. And so I signed up for massage, for shiatsu school. So I moved into the monastery, moved to San Diego, left my job, and signed up for the school all in the same day.
Oh,
the next morning. The next morning when I woke up in the monastery, I felt like 80% better.
Oh my gosh.
And it took me years to realize that all of those things that I had done contributed to my well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So when people ask me, what did you do to get over fibromyalgia? I say, I moved into a monastery, I quit my job, and I started school. I started to follow my dream. I started to follow my life path. One of the things that I really resonated with the holistic health school that I went to is that the program, the Shiatsu program, talked about this idea of connecting with your dream. Mm-hmm. And there's a story that I really like. I'll try to make it short. It relates to Confucius, and it's supposed to be true because it was in the diaries of several of his students. And the story is that Confucius and his students, you know, Confucius, of course, the father of Chinese philosophy, mm-hmm. one of the fathers of Chinese philosophy, that he and his students wanted to find a very isolated place to meditate. And they were meditating on one side of the bank of a river, that there was really no way to cross the river, either swimming or on boat. And there was a bridge, you know, a long distance up north, up the river. And there was another bridge a long distance down the river. So they were in complete isolation and could study at peace. And while they were studying on the other side of the river, they saw an old man walking up to the edge of the river and looked down into the river. And after a few seconds, he jumped in the water. And, of course, they saw him jump in the water, and they thought he was going to die. And they could see his river, his body in the river being floating down river, and his body would come up every now and then, and it would sink into the water. Eventually, he made it to the same side of the river that they were on, and they caught up to him and started asking him why he tried to kill himself. And he said, I wasn't trying to kill myself. And they said, well, we saw you. What do you mean? You know you can't swim in this river. And he said, look, I grew up in this river. He said, I've learned from childhood that if I look at the water and I jump in at the right time and stay relaxed and hold my breath, the water will pull me under. Eventually, the water will bring me back up and I can breathe again. Mm-hmm. And as long as I continue to do that, go with the flow, mm-hmm. stay relaxed, and hold my breath, breathe efficiently, the river will carry me to the other side. So the reason that I like this story in relation to this idea of finding our path is because that's the way that it is when we're looking for our own particular path for our life purpose. That the idea is that the river, of course, is our life path. Mm-hmm. If we stay soft, which means we learn how to release tension in our body through our lives, if we breathe efficiently, eventually we will find our path. But if we resist any of that, then the river will toss us in all different directions and we will get beaten up and hurt and all sorts of injuries can happen. So the idea is that the closer we stay to our path, the more that we go with the flow, the more relaxed we stay in our bodies, and the better, the more efficient we are at breathing, the better chances we'll have to connect with our life path. And I really think that's what happened. Yeah, and I really think that's what happened with me when I went to the school, that I jumped into the river.
After that, what are the steps that you did in order to continue healing?
Well, first of all, I stayed at school. I studied as much as I could, and I learned some things that were very important, and to this day, I consider them to be very, very important, not only for fibromyalgia, but really for in any and all health conditions, whether they're physical or emotional, and of course, to help us really connect with our true life path. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I learned is I was taking a class at this school that was called body reading. At the time, I believe it was mm-hmm. called Oriental Health Assessment. And it's a class where we learn that the body has this incredible intelligence to show on the outside what's going on the inside. Mm-hmm. You can tell if you wanted to talk to your boss to get a raise and you walked into his office, as soon as you saw him or her, you would know whether it's a good time to ask for a raise or not. If you came home after doing something bad, you would know if your mother knew just by the way she was standing. Mm-hmm. So the body has this incredible intelligence of really illustrating on the outside everything that goes on the inside. And there are many traditions. Among them, one of the most famous is Ayurveda, the healing science of India, but also in the Shiatsu traditions and many other traditions, mm-hmm. where they have learned to look at the body and to interpret the signs that the body gives to help understand what's going on internally, emotionally, and nutritionally and with organ systems and all of these different things. One of the things that I learned in this class was the idea of how the body discharges. Mm-hmm. And based on the discharge, we're able to tell what's going on, forecast what's going on inside of our bodies. And I learned that in these discharges, for example, the breath is a great way. That we're told that 70% of the metabolic waste that we produce in our body comes out through the breath. I had horrible breath at the time. Sweat. Mm-hmm. I used to sweat all the time. I used to have night sweats. I was always drenched in sweat. My skin, I had acne all over my face, my back, the back of my legs, and emotions. My emotions were absolute mess. I could get angry for no reason. I could feel depressed and crying for no reason. And the other discharge that I discovered was very important is what our body produces. So everything that comes out of our body, our poop and our pee, mm-hmm. are also very important. I actually taught a class for many years at the school that I called the Tao of Poo, where we talked about learning what our body was telling us based on what was coming out of our body. So that was one of the things that really helped me a lot, to be able to tell what was coming out of my body and how what was being shown of the on the outside of my body was being affected by other things that I did. For example, food. Mm-hmm. And that's another important thing. Food, not only learning, for example, that it was not efficient for my body to have McDonald's for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that it was better to eat better quality food, organic food, and things like that. But also, I learned that along with what I eat, it was also important to know when to eat, mm-hmm. and how to eat. If I ate when I was not hungry, that was a problem. If I ate, if I skipped a meal, that was a problem. Mm-hmm. If I ate and I was watching the news, or if I was watching some horror movie or some action movie that disturbed my emotions, that also was very influential in my health, my overall health. So body reading was one of the things that I learned, that I implemented with all my clients and taught in my classes. Food, what we eat, how we eat, when we eat was very important. And the other thing that I learned that I wish I could say any one of these was the most important, but I think they're all the number one most important. I learned something about the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And in a very, very simple way, we can say that the nervous system can be looked at as divided into two branches, the sympathetic branch and the parasympathetic branch. The sympathetic branch is what's referred to as the fight or flight or freeze, mm-hmm. response. And that's the system that gets activated when we're in danger, or if we think we're in danger. If you've ever watched a scary movie and you remember being right in the middle of the scary movie, mm-hmm. and somebody touches you in the back and you jump because all of your senses are heightened, that's what's supposed to happen in the fight or flight or freeze response. The other branch of the nervous system is referred to as the parasympathetic nervous system. And that is the part that is active when we can rest, digest, and repair. Mm-hmm. If the nervous system is more active in the sympathetic system, then we're not going to be able to heal. Even if we're eating the best organic food, even if we're doing whatever else we're doing, the body needs to be able to function from the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest, digest, repair. I learned that the way that I exercised, if I exercised beyond my limits, mm-hmm. that would kick in the sympathetic system instead of staying active in the parasympathetic system. Breathing, we mentioned breathing earlier. Mm-hmm. Breathing was so important. If I'm not eating well, if I'm not exercising well, then my breathing is overloaded with metabolic waste, and it becomes more difficult for my body to breathe in efficient oxygen, efficient prana and chi from the environment, and to be able to nourish my body and my nervous system overall. So those are the things that I learned that I implemented after moving to San Diego, to the monastery, and all of those things. When I started learning about body reading. I started paying attention to my body. I started to see if I broke out into an acne in a certain part of my face. I knew that that corresponded to a particular emotion, to a particular organ, and I could tell which foods made that worse. Mm-hmm. If I got constipated, or if I got diarrhea, or if my body odor was very strong, I would look and see, what did I eat? Mm-hmm. How did I eat? Did I get upset? What happened? And then when I started to do exercise, I started paying attention. In Taoism, they have what they call the 70% rule, where you never do more than 70% of what you can do. And when I started to apply that, I was always working a little bit harder, but never too hard. Mm-hmm. And implementing that into my exercise, into my body work, into food, into breathing, into everything that I did in my life, was a tremendous relief.
And it's such an opposite of what we're used to nowadays, right? Which is pushing ourselves, constantly going the extra mile in the adrenaline rush from like movies and roller coasters, and we're just looking for the next adventure, and it's harming us. We didn't realize that. It's an incredible way of looking at the world.
Yes, and it's very interesting that you say that, because I do believe that there is a place for that kind of therapy. I remember going through a stage in my life where I was, because of many, many aspects, childhood trauma and other things, I was not in touch with my emotions, and it was very difficult for me to feel emotions. And I remember that's when I was going through my high school punk rock era. I remember cutting my skin with razor blades, and, you know, writing words and putting safety pins in my cheek and doing all these other things that were very painful, because that was the only way that I could feel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I believe that these therapies and these way of exercising, there is a place for them. It's not a very efficient way to do things, but it is a way to get in touch with emotions, and, mm-hmm. and it gives us the opportunity to work out these energies that otherwise would just stay inside, and if they're not exercised or exorcised, they might actually create more harm in the long run. So yeah. You know, there is a place, but eventually I think it's important to learn that the time comes when we can move away from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, we live in an age where people like that so much, that not only do they drink coffee a lot, but they also mm-hmm. drink these energy drinks that mm-hmm. have such high levels of chemicals in them that mm-hmm. give you this rush. You know, there's the adrenaline rush in sports, right? The X Games and things like that. And again, like I said, I do believe that there's a place for that. And I'm glad that people like you and I, and many of the people that you and I have worked with and met, mm-hmm. That have seen that there's a time, that the time comes when it's the right time to move away from that, mm-hmm. and to learn to appreciate our bodies and to fight excitement in things that are actually beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, one of the most exciting things that I discovered is I learned that I actually liked eating. You know, I remember the first time that I actually enjoyed the flavor of broccoli. I remember in my disability, one day I was eating and I tasted broccoli as the first food that I actually remember tasting. And it was such a pleasure. It was so exciting. And so now when I eat, a lot of my excitement comes from the flavors of the mm-hmm. food that I eat, the aromas, the textures, you know, and to be able to live life in the same way, mm-hmm. to be able to appreciate all the flavors of life, of every life experience, and all the textures of the experiences and relationships that we have with other people. So it's a different type of excitement.
Yeah, I agree. But it's being mindful, like you said, even the people you're enjoying the meals with. And anyway, so yeah, so it's a great way of looking at the world. It's different than the adrenaline rush, but it's still exciting, it's still beautiful, and there's a sense like of more emotion and being more inside than looking for something else. But when you find that peace and that excitement inside and from the things that you do, then there's a calm and a peacefulness that brings joy, and it's more long-lasting. That's what I think.
Yes, and when you get to that point, because the body is not working so hard at healing the injuries that we create every day with our diet, with our exercise, with having a job that we hate, then the body can focus more on really listening to our higher self, to our higher consciousness, and it gives us the opportunity to begin to connect with our calling, with what it is that we actually came here to do. Mm-hmm. So not only is there that new excitement of being able to enjoy life activities, but the much, much bigger picture is the excitement of beginning to connect with your true purpose in life, and mm-hmm. realizing that you can get to the point and eventually get to the point where every activity you do in your life brings you closer to realizing that higher potential, mm-hmm. to really connecting with what it is that you came here to do.
I love one of the things that I learned from Seymour, one of our teachers, was that every action that you take, to be mindful and ask yourself, is this action bringing me closer to my dream or away from my dream? I mean, such a small thing, but at the same time, big, because if we take the time before we do anything to ask that question, we'll always be in the direction of our dream and our purpose.
Yes, another one that I really liked that I also learned from him was to ask ourselves, would I do that if I was pregnant?
Oh, that's a great one, yes.
And I remember talking about that in many classes and saying, you know, would you really do that if you were pregnant? And I would say, you know what? Even men, we are pregnant, mm-hmm. and we're all pregnant. What are we pregnant with? We're pregnant with our higher self.
Yes.
We all were born through the womb, the physical womb of our mother. And through that womb, we came in this body, but this body that we live in now, this is our current womb. Mm-hmm. And the child that is gestating inside this body, inside this physical womb, is our spirit, is our higher self. You know, we learn that from the moment that we are born, up until the moment that we're born, when we're in the womb, we're in the process of physicalizing, of becoming physical matter, of creating a human body that we can inhabit. And from the moment that we come out of the womb, we begin our journey back to spiritualizing our lives. So everything that we do can connect us with that. And if we start to look at our lives in either one of these two ways that we've mentioned, then it really puts a different twist on everything we do. You know, would mm-hmm. I really drink and drive if I was pregnant?
Yes.
Well,
that's correct.
You are. Yeah. You are pregnant. The same yes. danger that you run with drinking and driving, the same harm that you can cause to your physical body, that's the same harm that you can cause to your spiritual body in a sense. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Sorry to break it to you, but we all are pregnant.
So tell us a little bit of what are you doing right now with your clients? What modalities are you practicing to help people get closer to their dreams and their health?
Wow. You know, I've asked several of my teachers the same question, and they all tell me the same answer. And that is the same answer that I always give. That's the most difficult question I could ever answer. Because you get to a point where there really is no particular method. It becomes almost it's almost like a dance that you do with your client, and the client is the one that's leading, and you're just following, trying to figure out what to do. So what skills of everything that I've learned, of everything that I do, what can I do with this person to help this person find a way, first of all, to realize that there is a higher self that they can connect with, and then to do the kinds of things, if they choose to, that can help them connect with that higher self. And at the same time that it's a very complicated answer, it's also a very simple answer. The simple answer is that anything that I can do with my client to help them become more active in the parasympathetic nervous system and spend less time in the negative, in the sympathetic system, works.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today, Hugo. This was amazing. And
Thank you very much. It was quite an honor and very, very humbling for me to be here on your show today. What a wonderful experience to be able to speak from so many miles away, and there you are, you know, right in front of me. And together we're reaching more people and spreading the word that there is a different way to live. Mm-hmm. And yes. You know, it doesn't all have to be even especially in this environment of the virus, that, you know, we don't have to it's okay to be afraid, but we can still live in the parasympathetic mm-hmm. environment and still cultivate our health regardless of the turmoil that's going mm-hmm. on around us. So thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into Multidimensional Health Show. For more information or to schedule a private consultation, go to www.drtonycamacho.com. Have a great week.